Good afternoon, everyone, to the bus rail subcommittee meeting today on Monday, June 14th, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. We do have ASL interpreters with us on this line, so please, when speaking, state your name first. This helps them do their job well done. It also helps anyone joining through the phone call knowing who is the speaker. We do have a full agenda. I would ask if anyone would like to make some public comments, which I already have a couple of people on the list. You keep now so that I can put you on the list. I would also request everyone to please be mindful of the timelines. Keep your public comments to up to 3 minutes at the maximum. I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud for everyone's convenience. So give me a quick moment. I would go through the roll call of the committee members after reading the agenda. Chair Calabria will review and go through the motion of reviewing and approval of the agenda and prior meeting minutes. We do have the elevator escalator team with us to give us information about the escalator lighting at 4:10 p.m. At 4:45, we will have an update about Metrorail announcements. And we do have the team joined us already. at 5 p.m., we have a committee discussion about the floating bus stops. Afterwards, at 5:15, we have an open discussion that just allows the committee to discuss about any topics that they would like. At 5:30 p.m., we have ombudsman report. At 5:45, we will have the public comment period, and 6 p.m., the meeting will adjourn. That concludes the agenda for today. If you would bear with me, I would go ahead and take the attendance of the committee for today. Again, this is the bus and rail subcommittee meeting today on Monday, June 14th, 2021. Before I take the attendance, I just want to remind everyone that you can mute or unmute yourself. If you're on the phone calls, you can press *6. That will mute your voice and it will unmute your voice as well. If you'd like to make any comments, you can virtually raise hands by pressing *9. If you press *9 again, that would lower your virtual hands. And as you may recall, if you're joining through the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon that will mute or unmute your voice. If you go under reactions, that will allow you to raise your virtual hands or lower your virtual hands. At this point, I will take the attendance. Elver Ariza Silva, Darnese Bush, Tino Calabria.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dempsey.
Present.
Deborah Fisher. Melanie Jackson. Steve Caffin.
Present. Oops. Sorry about that.
Connected to two devices.
One person is present.
Thank you, Steve. If you have to connect through two devices, I would ask that you perhaps mute speakers of one of the devices. continuing forward with the attendance, Mary K. McMahon.
She has resigned.
Philippa Mazel. Well, she would still, if she wanted to continue, she could still continue with rest of the meetings for this month.
I'm here, Philippa Mazel.
Thank you, Philippa. Anthony is not going to be able to attend. He emailed and informed me. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Paul Semaphore. Patrick Sheehan. Kelly Simonon. Okay, thank you. That concludes the roster for today's meeting. And I have, as we have done in past, the presenters have been requested to describe their slides. If they're presenting any, they are aware and they will be doing that. So I just wanted to rest assured the committee that that's going to happen. At this point, I would ask Chair Calabia to move the meeting forward. Chair Calabia, you have the floor.
Yes, let me just mention that this is the second time in a row we haven't had a quorum. In any event, we have about two time slots that are virtually free for discussion. And I would like to propose that we, during part of the free discussion, look at the question of budget and the possibilities of fare free passage for riders on buses and rail cars. I sent out this afternoon a hello.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I sent out this afternoon a report from the Pew Charitable Trusts about systems, including ours, which are considering some form of reduced or yes.
Sorry to interrupt you. This is, I know your voice is coming a little faint. And after you are finished making your comments, I see Dr. Posner has his hand up.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
This is a little better, yes.
Okay. In any event, I'd like to add that to the agenda. If the other members, although we don't have a quorum, if the other members would agree to look at questions related to the budget and possible reduce or free fares.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just wanted to remind you that the subcommittees do not have quorums. They just meet.
Okay.
And can pass whatever they do in their meeting and then move the final motion onto the full committee. And when they have the quorum, it can be passed by the full committee.
Okay.
So you're fine. I would like to amend a little bit that after you finish talking about the bus fares, I'd like to report something about increased service hours on rail.
Oh, sure.
When you discuss, as part of that discussion.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
That'd be great. Well, let's see. The first item on the agenda deals with a review and approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Am I correct, Anu?
Yes, that is correct.
With regards to the draft minutes that we've seen, I do have one question, and it relates to what Tom Proctor, the environmental graphics design specialist, I think may have said. I don't, if he did say it, I don't see it reflected in the minutes, and it has to do with his comments regarding the aesthetics of the stations, the rail stations in general, and some of how it may have a bearing on accessibility. In fact, I remember particularly my reaction, and I said it, that aesthetics should not trump accessibility. I wanted to check the recording of the minutes in order to verify what I thought was discussed at that point by, especially by Mr. Proctor. But although Anu Conley provided me with a link to the recording, it required that I, on my Mac desktop, download some kind of Microsoft Merge or Microsoft app, which would allow me to somehow have the sound broadcast over my Mac. Unfortunately, even though I did download the Microsoft app twice, I could not access the sound. So I have no way of verifying what I thought Mr. Proctor had said. And I think it is important enough for us to maybe hold up approval of the minutes until we can verify what may have been said by hearing the actual verbatim statements that he made during the last meeting. Otherwise, there are a variety of things that came up during our discussion then. And since there are matters of substance and we do have some free time for discussion, I'd like to bring them up then. For instance, let's see, one of them has to deal with wayfinding and I'll have to find it in my notes. But in any event, why don't we go forward with the agenda as stated? Is that okay? Hello?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. So are you asked, just to inform everyone in case anybody had trouble hearing him, Chair Calabria was asking for approval for the agenda.
Yes.
Do we have a second?
So moved, Darnese.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Hearing no objections, we will go forward with the agenda. And I think the first one is our speaker at 4:10.
Yes, Chair Calabria, this is Anu again. We do have the LS team with us, and they will give information about the escalator lighting as it was discussed in the last month's meeting.
Good.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for having us. As we spoke last meeting, today I invited Madhavan Kosaporth. He is our he is the elevator escalator engineer in charge. So he's the managing engineering manager. So I thought he would be best to answer your questions. So I think he put together a couple of bullet points. Madhavan, are you on the line?
Yeah, Mitch, I'm here.
Okay. You got it. Go ahead.
I know, are you going to put the slide up for the?
Yes, I will.
So, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Madhavan Kosaporth. I'm the engineering manager for the elevator escalator department here in Metro. And I want to thank the AAC committee for giving me an opportunity to share with you all about this lighting project. So, we have Mitch Nietzsche, my general superintendent. So we'll go to the next slide. As you all know or may not know, the design of an escalator, the construction and installation is stipulated by the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. It's called the A17.1 code. So that, as a matter of fact, that covers all aspects of the design and manufacturing and installation and the functioning of the escalator. Same is the case with the lighting too. So here our topic of discussion is the lighting in the step tread area where you step on, so where the actual escalator steps. So the A17.1, as you see the first code bullet item, stipulates 5 foot candles at the step-tread area. That is the lighting intensity that is required at the step-tread area where you step on. Now, our specification, the WMATA specification, when we bid it out for our contractors, remains the same, whether it's an outside escalator or an inside escalator. So it's the same specification. So the lighting, what you see, you would see is, would be more adequate as an outside station where you have more ambient light versus when you have a dark tunnel like Bethesda or Woodley Park, when you come down the long escalator, it's darker because of the limited facility lighting out there. But at the same time, we have to meet our code. And as you see, is the requirement is 5 foot candles. And we do meet that code. Only when you meet that code, only the escalator can be put back in service. The current design, the WMATA architectural specification talks about a specific lighting intensity called in Kelvin. It's described in Kelvin, just like kilograms and meters and centimeters. The lighting intensity is specified by the unit Kelvin. And here it's 3000 Kelvin that has been accepted. It's a warmer light. I just want to give you a brief idea. So on the top of the line, you see color temperature Kelvin, 2700 Kelvin, 3000 Kelvin, and 5000 Kelvin. And the next line is about the light appearance. 2,700 or 3,000 is a warm white light. The more you go towards the right, it becomes cooler and sharper. So, and then same thing with ambience, you know, the 2,700 or 3,000 is a more cozy, inviting. 3,000 is warm, welcoming, whereas the 5,000, 6,000 series is more invigorating.
Sir, can I ask, you mentioned as you go from left to right, you get cool daylight on the right.
Right.
Could you explain how where glare comes in?
It's more sharper, more than the glare. So I'll talk about the glare. Probably that's one thing. It's going to be in the next slide. Okay. Is the difference in the balustrade panel where the light is attached to. It's a stainless steel balustrade panel. Probably, is that what you're talking about, the glare coming out of the panel?
That's one of the biggest problems that our folks encounter in lighting.
Yes, and I will talk about that also. And in fact, I did put that as a bullet point, by the way.
Okay.
So, but if you look at the series, what you call it, going now to the 6000 series, which we had installed, was brighter. Keeping in mind that we have to meet the code, that's one requirement. Like as I explained in the beginning, we have one standard specification that covers both the outside, the ambient escalators in the ambient light condition and inside the dark tunnel. So so we have had that light design. Whereas for the 6000 series, as you see, it's more for basement garages, which means more darker environment. We can go to the next slide. So currently, we are, based on the architectural approval, we are going with the 3000K, which is much more milder. And all the product submittals, we're going towards that now. So like, you know, we mentioned that sometimes the 6000 series can be a little sharper and blue, stronger for folks. At the same time, I mentioned the next bullet is the reflection from the stainless steel balustrades. Instead of the brown panels, make it brighter. So yes, in the previous WMATA design, especially in the downtown stations, you might have seen it's darker tunnels, inadequate, you know, facilities lighting, not enough to lit up the escalator. But if you go to an office building or an office space, the ups on the top where you have adequate facilities lighting, you don't have this issue because there is, you know, it's covering all over. But here in this day, we are restricted with that. And we went away from the brown balustrade panels because it's, you know, it's not durable. Stainless steel is more durable. We get more life. It can take more impact because of, you know, because of the ridership and stuff like that. And whereas the bronze is a softer material, and we have to reclad those skin again. So those were the reasons why we went to the stainless steel. And now we are calming it down from 6,000 to a 3,000. So it should be much better. But you would see, like I said, you will see the difference when you come from an outside ambient condition into a darker area. So it varies from one facility to another facility. People can see the distinct difference when it's a silver line versus orange line when it comes to the darker the downtown stations. Typically, what MARA stations are, and the facilities are like that. So we're trying to come to a fine line so it will be acceptable to everybody. We're continuing to do more work in that area. We have an upcoming, the currently running rehabilitation program. We have calmed it down to a 3000 K. We're testing that. And then we continue to go in that process as approved by the architects of WMATA. That's where we are. And that's all I have in my presentation slide, so.
Madam, may I interrupt for 1 second, please?
Sure.
So you're saying that you have in some cases a 6,000 Kelvin lighting, and you're changing it down to 3,000 Kelvin for lighting, which is a warmer light.
Yeah, for the current, right, yeah, the current design, yes.
Okay, so I can add an additional piece of information because Tino asked about glare. There have been studies that the cooler the light, meaning that the 6,000 K, which is the cooler the light, the more that people with visual disabilities or people who are older can see it more as a glare. And the glare is represented like a nebulous color so that it basically creates some sort of a fuzziness in your vision. And that had been something that the architects, I'm sure, have discussed with you, yes. And you have looked at, and that's why you're changing it. Is that correct?
To the 3000, yes.
Yeah.
That was one of the things.
Warmer light.
Right. So, you know, like I said, we were playing around with, to make sure, like I told you, like our biggest challenge is to meet the 5-foot candle. But we have to be mindful for, to the extent possible, we could be mindful for everyone to understand their concerns. And we are mindful about that. That's why we're going into a calmer color code. Hopefully that would, you know, fix the problem.
Yeah, I am thrilled to hear that. I was not fully aware of all of your efforts on that part. Yes.
Thank you, yeah.
So to be clear, Madhavan, we are talking about the new installation.
New installation,
we're talking about, Carol, we're talking about starting with Gallery Place and that group of 100 plus escalators. Okay.
Yeah. All right. The upcoming Kone replacement project would also have the 3000 K lighting arrangement. Now we'll have to go back to the, if there are concerns and complaints, we definitely would love to go back and look at it, review it. We'll review on a case by case basis and, you know, we'll work on that.
Okay.
Sir, could you mention again, which in terms of adequate lighting and minus bad glare, which K is best?
3,000.
3,000.
Yes.
And this 3,000 is now in which stations? All stations or just some or where?
That's Madhavan.
I have to get it from our capital team. We just finished four or five rehabilitation on that. I'll get you the list, the one that we just completed, five of them.
Okay. Now, unfortunately, is Doris Ray present yet?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a question, if I could ask it.
Yeah, sure.
Madhavan, Kelvin is a measure of heat. The question I have is, if you're generating that at the bulb, where are you actually measuring the candle power and the heat? Because the glare that we talk about, and Doris will discuss this, is actually on the actual step of the escalator. So it would be nice to know what the candlelight and the Kelvin heat and the glare is in the middle of the step. And so the question is, are you measuring it at the bulb? Because there's also a plexiglass shield between the bulb and ambient. Because the important measurement really is what is actually on the step.
Absolutely. So that's 5 foot candles, right? It's right at the step, the step tread area. The code specifically asks for a minimum of 5 foot candles. That's on the step tread area.
Hey, thank you. So that is where you're measuring. Terrific. Yeah.
Again, may I ask, is Doris ready?
Chair Karabi, this is Anu. I do not see Doris connected yet, but Barbara has a question. Barbara,
is here. I might ask Patrick because he has a very similar problem and he's here.
Yeah, is he here? Is Patrick present? Patrick?
In Barbara Millville.
Well, if Patrick is not here, nor is Doris, is our friend Barbara Millville present?
Yes.
Barbara,
go
ahead,
please.
Patrick is.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm having problems hearing this discussion.
The interpreters are also having problems hearing the discussion.
Right. Phil, I can hear you. Could you repeat your last question? This is Patrick.
The question asked and answers were, where the actual measurements of Kelvins and candlelight are, and the answer was on the step.
Oh, right. Yes, I got that, Phil. Thank you. Yeah, it was after that that I lost the audio. I don't know what it was. Yeah, I thought you'd called my name for something. Okay.
So, again, if we could have the names of the stations, then maybe some of us, or at least one of us, and hopefully someone like Doris Ray or Patrick Sheehan or our friend Barbara Millville might be able to check it out and to see if in fact there is minimum glare emitted from these bulbs onto the stairway.
I will definitely send it to Anu. Is that you, Anu, that I should send?
Okay.
Definitely, no problem.
Tino, and that's great. I can check the ones out around me here. Okay. Get me out. That's good. Okay.
Yeah. So once we have the names of the stations, all of us will have them. And Patrick, you for sure. And hopefully Doris Ray and our friend Barbara Millwell might have them.
Barbara's a must. Yes.
Yes. Are there any other statements or questions of our guests?
Yes, this is Barbara. I'd like to make some comments, please.
Oh, yes. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. There's a lot that I have to say on this topic. It's not all in the same order, so if I could just kind of make all my comments and then you could respond. A lot of, I think what the problem here is that it creates a disco kind of a feel, like, because people are walking up and down the escalators and they're kind of shielding the light as they walk past. And people like Doris, Philippa, et cetera, they will say that this is also very true when they're trying to get on a new 7000 series train, to where the light from the floor lamps flashes, of course, letting you know the train is there and stuff, but that reflects on that stainless steel of the cars, whereas before the older cars were brown, so that kind of shielded some of that. I think what really needs to happen is, as you guys are saying, people need to get out and look at these, because I think that some of the comments that people had in the past, they may want to change their comment, because a lot of the stations have been having a lot of lighting work done on the platforms especially. So A problem that a lot of people who you choose to use their vision have is the light to dark transition.
Yeah.
They come in from a very bright light, and then they go in the metro, relatively speaking, darker environment. And that is an issue here because they're going from the mezzanine to a dark tunnel. Again, a lot of this lighting on the escalators, it really, like the gentleman was saying from Metro, it can't be really fixed as easily because the tunnels are very dark. There's no way to bring in other light.
Yes.
So the problem with the lighting on the escalators is, I think, magnified in the tunnels. And I have been seeing a lot of the LED lighting that has like a dot dash kind of a setup to where it's not all that solid, narrow panel going all the way up to the top of the escalator. It has breaks where there's no, it's dim. And I'm not sure that can be changed or not. I would recommend having some lighting underneath the handrails of the escalator and also investigating the neon lights. I was wondering if the gentleman from Metro could say if we do have those options available to us. I don't believe the covers are going to help because that's going to get involved. Like Doris was saying, I believe a couple months ago that she was suggesting that covers over the lights might help, but I don't believe that's a good thing because we're talking about safety here.
Yeah.
And people could be, you know, tripping on their part of their whatever, shoes could get caught in there. It's just not something good. I also have a question. Yeah. I have a question about what the lighting code is for the middle of the escalator. You had mentioned 5-foot candles for when getting on.
On the step.
I'll stop there.
No, it's for the step tread area where you're standing.
At any point on the step tread.
But what about, like, say we're halfway down the escalator?
It's got to be the same. It's got to be 5-foot candle.
Yeah.
Five the whole way. Okay.
As a minimum. Yes. Those are minimums.
Mm-hmm. Problem. And how much K are there, excuse me, the lighting intensity, that would be the foot candles. How much are you seeing for those kind of escalator lighting that ran all the way up from the bottom, one long stream of light, so to speak? And those were more like the 5,000 or 6,000 K. I think they were at Glenmont.
Glenmont is the same design, Kone. So they should also have the same 5,000 to 6,000 K.
Well, but those people are having a lot of problems with those, the ones where it's looking very, very white.
Yes.
And the panel goes all the way up. No breaks in the light. Have you tested? Do you have a light meter that you could test that out?
Not the K's. We didn't test the K, but we do test the foot candles at the step tread area.
I'm curious about what that is, like halfway down that escalator in a tunnel setting. Because I don't think that the people that we're talking about are going to be impacted by the lighting if we have an open environment, like just say outside of the tunnel, because there's so much ambient light coming in there.
Right. I mean, you brought a good point about the transition, right? From an ambient condition to a darker tunnel. That really creates the challenge that you're talking about.
Yeah, and just so you know, for people with partial sight, it could take them 3 or 4 times longer to have their eyes adjust. And it's like going into a movie theater and then, you know, all the people are like, hurry up, hurry up. And they're just trying to find the steps and whatnot. And it's quite a challenge, and people sure. just don't feel comfortable wearing sunglasses or a cap. The problem with this escalator lighting is also that it's down. It's normally you have your head, you know, kind of looking down, and it's just something that's not easily avoidable.
Sure. No, I really respect that, and we are mindful of that. So those are the yes. modifications we are in the process of doing that. So for anyone, we're trying to, you know, compromise and help in whatever way we can. So we are mindful yep. about that.
Are you able to get the... maybe do some testing, a pilot on the below the handrail lighting?
We haven't gotten into that yet. So the first thing we're going to do, like as I talked about, is to calm it down from 6 or 5,000 to a 3,000 series. So we're going to do that. And like I said, I want to get some feedback from folks, and then we go from there.
That's a very smart move to go to 3,000.
Not to be too technical, but what's actually happening is you're bleaching out the rods in the retina with the bright light. If you think about photographers going from the dark room out of the dark room, or radiologists reading x-rays right. and going out, they will wear amber or red goggles or glasses to maintain the function of their rods when they go back in, because there is 5 to 15 minute time to regenerate the rods once they're bleached. And so it's really the shock of that bright light that's doing the damage. Sure. And I would not recommend that the passengers with low vision wear red goggles, I mean, because that would probably make things worse. But that's clearly what's happening with those lights, is you're bleaching out the rods in the retina.
Right.
Phil?
Yeah.
This is Pat. I just wanted to ask a question. I'm getting a little confused with what we're talking about here. Using Glenmont using Glenmont as the station to talk about lights. We're talking about the lights as you come into the station and you're taking the escalator down to where the fare card gates are. Are we saying that those lights on the escalator are too bright, or I'm trying to understand what we're saying here?
Yes, Patrick, this is Barbara. They yeah. are very light. They have a harsh kind of light coming off of them. That's because of the high K.
Right.
And it's a very long tunnel there. So people are forced to use that as a way to right. get down to the
yeah.
bottom. I mean, it could take the elevator, sure.
So my question is, we're not saying that we want to take those lights out, because I find that they're a very useful navigation tool, particularly right. in helping me. I can see the lights as they're going up, you know, as they're moving up, so I can tell I'm walking towards an escalator. But what you're saying is you want to have it a softer light than the harsh light that you're seeing now. Is that
yes.
what you're saying? Oh, okay. Okay, good. That's what
they also have, Patrick, just so you know, they also have a bluish neon light. Mm-hmm. Which that may be a possibility that would right. eliminate a lot of the harshness, but then okay. I'm afraid yeah. that for the regular people with perfect sight, so to speak, that's going to be too dark for yeah. them. It's not going to give okay. enough light.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's and a compromise.
Once we do that pilot, I'll be happy to look at it. I was trying to understand, hoping that we weren't going to take the lights out because they serve as a good navigational aid, but I can understand where they may be too bright.
Yeah, we cannot take it out either because of the code requirement, like I mentioned, the first slide. So
yeah.
that's a good. Must. Now, only thing is about the harshness that we can right. work on. Yes.
Right. Okay. All right. I'm good with that. Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it.
Sir, can you answer the question? Is that able to be changed? Like, and again, I want to clarify that I haven't been to Glenmont in over a year. So I'm assuming that's the same escalator lighting that's there currently.
Yeah, that's a new Kone escalators that we installed. Now, when you say the light, it's not the bulb itself that we can change. We have to change the wall fixture. So the way the new design, newly designed LEDs come, they are a little pricey, of course, that I will have to work within my department to see what we can do. So, but it's not just a simple bulb that we can change. It has to be a wall fixture, the way the LEDs are designed, by the way. But we will definitely give it an attempt.
So are you able to actually change the pattern on those LED lighting?
Yeah, we, like as I said, we will be able to go to a calmer from like a 6,000 series into a 3,000. That's a possibility. Like I said, we haven't done that yet. We haven't ventured into it yet.
Well, actually, I was asking about like on the silver line, that's one example of where they have the solid light going all the way up.
Yes.
However, I did see some what I will call dot dash kind of lighting to where there's like a band of light that's maybe,
yeah,
I don't know, 3 feet. And then there's like a break in light where 1 foot is dark. And I mean, are you able on that particular escalator type of a setup, are you able to flip a switch and change it? Like my Christmas lights, okay? I got all kinds, like 8 or 9 different settings, and they're LED bulbs. It can be a solid, it can be flashing, you know, all kinds of different colors. So that's why
various, I'm asking. Various design models comes with various designs. Kone is different from Schindler. Schindler is different from Fujitech. So they all have various design models, right? Again, all these companies are, as a matter of fact, is only looking at the 5-foot candle, right? Like, hey, we got to meet the code. By this lighting arrangement, we are meeting it. But now I do understand your concerns about this dot, dot, dot things, which is kind of harsh on the eyes. So we will be mindful on that. At the same time, let's do some research and see what we can do.
To be clear, I think what she was asking was, is it adjustable? Which it is not. So
okay.
It can be changed, but you would have to retrofit each escalator with a different fixture and a different type of bulb. So yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
But it's,
oh no, I'm not. We're not requesting anything of that. We're going to work with you guys and
right.
What you have currently in house. And okay, thanks.
Okay,
you're welcome.
I appreciate this detail. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Are there any other members or guests who would like to comment on this lighting business?
Yeah, this is, and I do not see any
sense at this point. I know your sound is breaking up or something. But anyway, if there are no other questions, or if no one else.
This is Philippa. I was just going to say, I do agree with the everything Barbara was saying about the lights. They're too harsh, and it's like blinding one moment. And it does make it very difficult to see. So I just wanted to chime in on that and lend my time to do what we need to do to visit a station or something to give input. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes. So, sir, when can we get the names of the stations that now have had work done on?
Tomorrow.
Oh, good. Good. All right. Given that, are there any other questions or statements?
This is Barbara. I would like to know when brand new elevators come in, because it appears that some of the stations that have been renovated like last summer, this spring, they have been using the older escalators.
One more time, you said elevators, so I.
Oh, excuse me. Escalators.
Can you repeat that question, Barbara?
Yes. I am wondering when it is, in what instance do you replace the whole escalator? Because I have noticed that there are some brand new ones and some that seem to be reconditioned, because like the light pattern will be the old light pattern from like 40 years ago.
Yes, yes. So good question. So Metro has got what you call a rehabilitation and replacement program. We have our capital team here with the elevator escalator department. So every 15 years, we go through a rehabilitation, like you said. We don't gut it out completely. We use the existing components, rehabilitate, refurbish, and put it back together. After 30 years, what we go through is a complete gutting of the program. We remove the truss, all the supporting members. That's called a replacement program. That is when you saw this brand new escalator with brand new lighting and the whole nine yard came in. But that's a very good question. Yes, that's when we
did. So why, like Dunloring, for example, that got the treatment. Why did that one not get a new escalator?
It's condition based. So there is a formula. It goes age, reliability,
location,
asset condition, truss condition, right, and weather. So there's four components that Matavan's team of engineers go and they assess escalators every 3 years. It's part of an FTA
requirement
mandate that they have to file. So all that's taken in, and these are it's a weighted formula, and it comes up with a score, and that's how Matavan's team and Matavan decides what unit to, you know, which escalators should be replaced. Now, rule of thumb, what we like to try to do is rehabilitate twice and replace on the third time. So roughly every 30 years. But the problem with that formula is we didn't create that formula till about 7-8 years ago. So it's going to take a little while to get into that rhythm where every 30 years it's being taken out and being replaced, and about every 10 years it's being rehabilitated. So it's two rehabilitations and one replacement. That's where we want to get to. It's not a perfect world. Right now we're using this formula to increase and do the best we can to keep our availability and reliability up.
Yeah, that's a very short escalator too, so it might give you more mileage. And thank you for all these formulas and stuff. This really sounds exciting. Metro is just so cool. You're so nerdy.
Love it.
How does this all relate to the new Silver Line? What's that, Mr. Gino? How does all this improvement or relate to the new Silver Line stations?
So a lot of for us, it's lessons learned, right? I mean, every progress that we make is based on lessons learned from the past, the feedbacks that we get from folks like you. So we take all those lessons learned and put it in the new contract. So it's always a continuous improvement. We make strides in progress from one stage to another. So you would see a much more improved performance, hopefully. So.
You mean a much better performance on the Silver Line stations when they?
Hopefully, that's what we are hoping. That because we're carrying it over from the lessons learned.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I hope that you'll give us the names of those stations, and some of us will be able to go visit them to test them out in reality.
Yeah, sure. I'll definitely do that.
Thank you.
I'd like to especially thank Philippa and Patrick and actually Dr. Posner, who almost sounds like a ophthalmologist, and also, of course, our friend Barbara. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we now move to the next item on the agenda, Anu?
Sure, Chair Paz of Calabria. This is Anu. I'm on the phone now. Oh. The next item on our agenda is Metrorail announcements update, and we do have the team on the conference with us. So I would ask Mr. Goings and his team to go ahead and give us an update.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Goings?
Good afternoon, everyone. Tino, good to see you again.
Likewise.
Well, the last time we met, there were some concerns about the rail announcements at boarding. Is that correct? Is that where we were?
Well, I understand that maybe some of the recommendations we've been after are in the works or will be in the works.
Yes. I do believe, if I'm not correct, Carol, that they have presentation today, right?
Yes. I think Indica and David Souter are on the line. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and, we're here.
Oh, yeah, there you are.
Indica yes. and David are there.
Yes. And they have samples of the announcements to share with us. So Don, if you would like them to present that, that'd be great. Or
yes, that would.
Okay. Carol, could we just go over the original request real quickly?
Absolutely, please.
Okay. So back in the, I think it was in the March meeting, we discussed this topic. And the main comment at that meeting was that there's a long duration between the door opening, actual door opening chime, and the announcement for the, whatever the next station is, the destination station. And that was preventing passengers from knowing which train to get onto. So that was the main thrust of the changes to the messages that we'll present today. I'll just read the old message very, very quickly. First, there was a door chime, and then it said, doors opening, step back to allow customers to exit. When boarding, please move to the center of the car. So that is quite a long period of time before you get to the station, the destination station. So then it says, this is a red line train to Shady Grove. The next stop is, in this example, White Flint. So that was the old message. So we've put together some samples of a revised message, and which gets more to the point more quickly. And I hope that will address the concerns of the AAC. So Indica, could you please play the first sample message?
Yes. So this is for the all the stations except the station before the last station.
Doors opening. This is a red line train to Shady Grove. When boarding, move to the center of the car. The next stop is White Flint.
So you can see in the example that we just presented that the destination station is announced is almost immediately. So we've removed that long pause or that long delay in announcing the destination station in the announcement. Carol, would you like to expand on anything I've said?
Well, I think that what they have done, what you have done, David and Indica, is done exactly what the advisory committee asked, to move the destination, the end of line station immediately after the word doors opening. And I don't know if you might want to hear it again. Did everyone hear the message?
We can hear it again.
Yeah.
Yes, it was brilliant. thank you so much. Except I would get rid of, please move to the center of the car and do the next stop right after they get on, because they're not going to move to the center of the car until they're on the car and, you know, see how crowded it is. But thank you. That's exactly what we have asked for.
Bill, this is Pat, and I would agree with you on that change. I would have moved to the center of the car as the last message, but it's really, it is really well done. It serves the purpose that we asked for, and I think it's okay. It's good.
Can you play it again, though?
Play it again, Sam.
Yeah, sure.
Did you come?
Doors opening. This is a red line train to Shady Grove. When boarding, move to the center of the car. The next stop is White Flint.
Okay. So for safety reasons, we have retained some parts of the former message. And I understand your comment concerning the move to the center of the car. I do understand that. We're trying to also work within the limitations of the system software that we use to generate these messages.
May I comment?
Sure.
Thanks. This is much better. I think that 7-second announcement, which arrived, I think, in the mid-2000s and was on a trial basis and never was pulled out when people over probably 15 years just didn't respond to, those particular messages. I think you got rid of the two, which were the culprits. I think you got rid of the key one, which is please stand away from the, please let the people on the train get off first. At that point, people aren't thinking at all about that. They're doing it. I agree with both, with both Phil and Patrick. Although if necessary, I don't have a problem anymore with that move to the center. I think you've taken out the word please to make it even shorter. And so if this is it, I'm a lot more comfortable with this than at the previous meeting. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Is there another alternative that you had worked up, or is this it?
There's a variation on it for the end of line station, which you can play, Indica.
Yes. So the for the station right before the last station is it's going to announce instead of the next station, it's going to announce next and the last station. So I'll play that.
Doors opening. This is a red line train to Shady Grove. When boarding, move to the center of the car. The next and last stop is Shady Grove.
I play it again.
Doors opening. This is a red line train to Shady Grove. When boarding, move to the center of the car. The next and last stop is Shady Grove.
Okay.
So it's just slightly different than the first message.
Do we need the move to the center of the car?
I believe that's a safety request from safe.
That message actually breaks up station announcements, so it's not bad, Tino. Okay. Next, this is the current station, and the next, and then you have moved to the center of the car, and then you always have your next station is.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I think it works.
Okay.
Hey, Calabria, this is Zenu. Yes. I do see two hands up at this point, Phil Posner and Steve Kaffin. Steve, I'm not sure if your hand is up from the from previously. Okay, so we have.
I can't hear you very well. Phil? I can't hear you very well.
This is Phil Posner. Again, it's a brilliant announcement. The one question I have is, on occasion, in the middle of the day, they will change the route, or they'll have a special route where they won't go to the end of the line. So they will stop somewhere in the middle and tell everybody to get off the train. And so at those, is there a way for them to change that announcement midstream? So it suddenly, let the conductor or the driver make the announcement that this will be the last stop. This happens quite frequently on the Red Line. So they will do that. But otherwise, the announcements are absolutely what we've asked for, and thank you so much.
Oh, no, I'll say about the other requests, but I'd like to thank David and Indica, and especially Ms. Lopez. They worked diligently on this thing for you. So I'd like to say that, okay? So.
Thank you, Don. I think that what happened is Don and a lot of people with WMATA got together and talked about it. And of course, nothing would happen if David and Indica didn't get involved. But
that's correct.
But to get all of us to agree, it was great to have Don at the head to tell us that we have to all play with each other and nicely end it. And get it done, and it was great. So I'm glad that you were able to do this.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Just very quickly, Mr. Goings and your team, you've been great. You know, you've come back enough.
Oh, thank you.
You've been so responsive. And, you know, each time you've been a really good listener. I can tell, and from the comments, I think we can all tell based upon each time you coming back with modifications based upon what we've talked to you about. And I think you've got something that's going to make it easier for the riders. And it's also going to make it easier for the operator if there's a unique announcement to have more time to give it and give it quickly by your curtailing as much as possible that particularly long announcement that nobody really, as we've seen, nobody really has been listening to. So I just want to congratulate you. And I have one other question. Am I right that in the 7,000 series and maybe the 8,000 series, as the train approaches the station, the name of the station is announced? And when it gets to the station, it's announced? Just a yes, yes or no. I thought I heard it.
It's announced on approach.
In other words, just before the train approaches the station.
Yes.
Name of the station is announced. Am I correct?
Yes.
No, that's great. And when it gets to the station, is it re-announced while the doors are closed or the doors open?
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's great. You know which system does that? The Paris system.
Okay.
They actually announced as the train before the train touches the station, they announce the name of the station. And then when it reaches the station itself before the doors open, they announce it again. And it's amazing, the customers actually move to the doors because they know what's happening even before the doors open, and it moves it more quickly. So congratulations, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Patrick, had one last question. I might've missed it. Is this going to, when are we going to put this new announcement on the trains?
David, do you know when?
So we have developed a rough timeline for this. And right now it looks, we're projecting that it will be on at the end of August.
Oh, wow.
Our projection.
Oh, we have to expect it that fast. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Good job. As everyone else has said. Thank you.
I just want to say this. This will probably be my last meeting. Ms. Santos, the person working with me, she's on the line. She'll be working with Carol and Anu and the committee from this point next month on. So I'd like to thank the committee for its diligence to its constituents. So thank you again.
Don, this is Anu. Deborah Fisher has one question.
Okay.
Thank you. This is Deborah Fisher.
Great, Ms. Fisher.
My Thank you. My question, and it's not exactly on point, but it's related, and I apologize that since I'm relatively new to this committee, this may have been discussed before. One of the things that I've observed is there's a kind of franticness that some people experience when the doors open that contributes to who listens and what they're hearing, and do they rush in to the car or wait before the announcement is even completed, and which results in frequently people not being able to hear. So my question is, how much time is allotted for the doors to remain open? Because watching that happen, particularly with folks who suffer from anxiety or are overwhelmed by just general stimulation, there are just lots of accidents and risks associated.
The operators are not to close the doors to the last person is boarded. Change the fact that people tend to, as a behavior, to want to get on before somebody gets off. And that creates that little issue right there at the door where people are trying to get past the next person. But the operator has been pretty much instructed to not to close the doors till he sees the last person boards.
Okay. Is there something we can tell our folks about that to reassure them when people are pushing past them and pushing around them? Because this, of course, does create, you know, when you're talking about people who suffer from anxiety or who don't like it when people touch them, it makes it particularly complicated when we're training them.
You can tell them if they're on that platform attempting to board, the operator will not close that door until they have stepped aboard that train.
Okay. And is there, so
go ahead.
So does the operator stick their head out the window, or does somebody actually check the platform? Is there some communication process for that?
Absolutely. It's a requirement for the operator to put his head outside that window before he even attempts to even close the doors. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you.
No problem. Anytime.
Again, thank you very much.
Mr. Blake, Chair Calabria, this is Zeno. Mr. Blake, I believe, wants to make some comments.
Yes, thank you. And I just wanted to say to my colleague, Mr. Goins, thank you for all you've done and being responsive. We've had so many meetings, the pre-meetings, before the AAC meetings, the post-meetings, after the AAC meetings. And I do agree that this is a major step, because we've gone through a lot of challenges and understanding. And I've had, you know, I'm a guy who works on talking points, and I take your talking points. But for the whole team, I appreciate the work you've done to hear the customers and do as much as you can to try to accommodate their very well thought of recommendations. And I wish you the best in all your endeavors, and just really enjoyed working with you. And thank you for everything.
Thank you, Christian.
Hear, hear. Very good. Thank you again, Mr. Goings.
Thank you, Tino.
Next,
Steve. Item.
And Tino?
Yes.
This is Patrick. I had a question. Also, on the trains, Mr. Blake, maybe you know this. Don't they have cameras on the outside so that in addition to the driver looking outside to see that everyone's boarded, they have cameras also that give a second view?
No, I've seen that actually not on the trains that I'm aware of. What I've seen, there was a pilot at, it may have been the Tacoma station or another station along that line that I've ridden along the red line. I can't tell you exactly where, but I've seen where we had pilot, where we had cameras all up and down the platform, and the driver can look up at a television screen. I think it was the Phil Posner idea, but I think they were doing it even before I got to them to tell them the Posner idea. But somebody had come up with the idea of putting a television monitor at the end of the platform, and then the train operator can look at the monitor to see the length of the train. But I haven't seen that throughout the entire system yet.
That was, I remember that pilot project. I didn't know if it had it turned into anything or not. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that was a pilot that we had requested when they received the grant for security based upon terrorism. And we asked if we couldn't hook the cameras into the driver's car, and they did set that up.
Yeah.
And we never did get feedback as to whether it was going to be continued. And it's also something we had requested on the 7000 series, that the cameras that are in there to see what's going on in the car might be at such an angle that they could also see what was happening at the door.
Let me add too that, this is Tina, in our handbook on rail car design, number 15, the 15th feature that we recommended is to have that kind of a visibility through some sort of closed circuit TV or other mechanism for the operator to see all the way down the line. We have formally adopted that as part of our handbook. In any event, again, Mr. Goings, you have been very patient coming back, and I gather now you all have had pre-meetings before our AAC meeting and then post-meetings afterwards. And having done all that, Mr. Goings, we have to applaud you, and it's a great model for other staff officers to do. Thank you again, Mr. Goings.
Thank you.
Next item, Anu.
Okay, so Chair, the next item is committee discussion about floating bus stops, followed by open discussion.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, you and Charlie Crawford have, the late Charlie Crawford, have been very concerned about floating bus stops. Do you want to start off? It's been said so many times, but do you want to reiterate it?
Thank you, Tino. There's an awful lot that's being done with respect to floating bus stops. I think several things that concern me is the lack, I think the biggest thing is the lack of uniformity of design of floating bus stops. The ones that that we've seen in Washington, D.C. are designed totally different than the ones that we see in Montgomery County, of which there are four different types. And the difficulty is not so much even, hang on. The difficulty is not so much the floating bus stop itself. The difficulty is that you have to cross a protected bike lane, maybe 8 or 9 feet, to get to that. While you're crossing that protected bike lane, you're at the mercy of bikes that are zooming down that protected bike lane, and putting visually impaired, particularly visually impaired people, but also maybe seniors and others at risk at trying to get to that floating bus stop. The other situation is, since they've taken the bus stop, moved it from the sidewalk to the first lane of traffic, how do you know where the bus stop is? There haven't been any poles. The visually impaired person's not going to be able to see that it got moved. So you're losing what we would say under ADA is effective communication, because you don't know that bus stop has been moved. They don't have a pole. They don't have any way to tell, except visually, that bus stops to move. So, and I think the third thing that I would say, and maybe Carol, you can help me here. I don't know what the rule is concerning floating bus stops, but are bikes allowed to travel only in one direction in the line of traffic? What is the law concerning bikes and scooters traveling?
The problem is the law doesn't tell you whether you can do one or the other. There's some bike paths where they are allowing two-way traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that are only one way, which could be a little bit less dangerous, but depending on how it's signed, I think that you have a point there that you don't, how are you going to know that there's this floating island that where you're supposed to pretend like you're safe and waiting for a bus? Right. The way that Charlie had said it at some point, and you had said, is to put some signage telling you there is a bus stop, and then this is how you get there, and watch out for bicycles. And I've often advocated for putting stop signs at these bicycle paths so that cyclists have to stop before they cross, not yield, stop, and then go.
But the stop sign is going to be hopefully for them to stop. But yes. I'm, as a blind person, crossing the 8-foot protected bikeway, I'm hoping that they're obeying the traffic laws. I don't have any way to know that there's not a bike zooming down the street. And this all came to head because Charlie was crossing one in front of his house and the bike passed within 2 inches of him as he tried to cross the bike lane. And that's how fast it was. And the bike wasn't stopping. So there are several things that they're looking to put in place with respect to floating buses. One is what they're calling an accessible pedestrian signal, audible pedestrian signal, which will tell you that there is a floating bus stop out there. They're also looking to do some road treatment on the sidewalk so that you will be able to tell that there's perhaps a scooter or a bike coming down that bikeway. But these are designs that they're putting, these are improvements they're putting together on the designs right now. And so what you've got is a design that was put out there that was not really shared with the blind community effectively, and put out there protected bike lanes for bicycles and scooters. Now, to be fair, what that has done is to take bicycles and scooters off the primary sidewalk and move them to this protected bike lane. But it also puts pedestrians, particularly blind pedestrians, in peril when you have to cross over to get to that bike stop, floating bus stop, and you're hoping that there's no bike coming. So,
In addition to any signage or physical changes related to the floating bus stops, mm-hmm. it's also obviously a problem because the bicyclists are not paying attention.
Right.
I don't think it's necessarily because they want to create dangers for us. I think maybe we ought to have a group of us or a task force go to the bicycle associations and tell them about the problems that many bicyclists inadvertently cause when they don't realize that we're here and we may not see them, so they have to be extra careful.
That would be a very good education piece, Tino, and you're right in line with what we're thinking about in Montgomery County. Basically has happened is that you've moved the conflict from the cars and bicyclists, right?
Yes.
So that the bikes and cars aren't competing for the same space, but you've moved it now so that you've got the same conflict between bicycles and pedestrians.
Yes.
And so it has not been well thought out.
No. Well, in the meanwhile, I guess we have to rely on an educational program for bicyclists. They have associations, and those associations have newsletters, mm-hmm. and other ways of communicating to other bicyclists or even scooter riders. Maybe a couple of us could appear at their meetings and try and explain how we view this and the dangers it causes us.
I think that would be, if the subcommittee wishes to do that, I would be very happy to be part of that effort, which is where I was going anyway.
Yeah. So. Okay, Patrick, I would be one to join you if we could get it on the agenda of one of the or more of the bicyclist associations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And plead with them and also have them spread the word amongst their ridership members.
Great, Tino. Be good. So I know Washington Bicycle Association, and in Maryland, it's Bike Maryland. Yes. I don't know what Virginia has, but yeah.
Well, okay, so you and I and maybe others will join, especially if there's anyone in Virginia who can help out in explaining this to the Virginia Association.
Okay, yeah, and perhaps what we can do, Tino, if you'd like, would be bring this up when you report at the full committee and see if we get anybody else that would like to join us in the effort.
Sure.
I've got people in Silver Spring that have been working with me on this for 2 years, and this would be good. And I'll let Sue Crawford know that we've got a subcommittee at WMATA that's interested in this. That'll make her very happy to know.
Oh, do I very will. Much. Oh, that's a great idea. That's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another salute to Charlie.
Exactly, Tino. Very good.
Great idea, Patrick.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, this is Philippe. I wanted to weigh in on that. That's a subject very close to my heart because it irritates me to no end the way these bikes are zooming around on sidewalks when there's a bike lane right there beside them. And like I said, I look down and I look up and all of a sudden there's a bike in my face. So I will be happy to participate with that effort.
Excellent. So now,
Chair Calabria, yes. Dr. Posner has his hand up.
Sure.
Dr. Posner, go ahead.
Bill?
Yes, I'd like to make a suggestion along the line that Carol Lopez had made, and that is to treat the pathway from the sidewalk to the floating bus stop as a crosswalk. And so not just a stop sign, but like they have in D.C., have the flashing lights come on. And again, that may get the attention of the bicycle riders, the skateboarders, and the scooter people that are riding in that bicycle lane, and get them to stop before they go through there and permit the pedestrian to get out to the street. The reason for having a floating bus stop is actually to protect the bus. Because what would happen in places like Georgetown, the bus would pull to the curb and then they couldn't get back into traffic. And so this was a concept of making it easier for the bus and not taking into account the safety of the pedestrian. And so I think a warning sign would be very useful.
Well, the bureaucracy It may take a while to get the bureaucracy to create the kind of signage or blinking lights. But if we could do that, that'd be great too. But I think also that we should help educate the bicyclists and scooter riders about our predicament, the danger to us. So if there are no other comments on this.
There's one other thing, that I perhaps can share with the with the committee. Is a very long read and I'm not done with it yet, is a product from an organization in Silver Spring called Tool Design. And they have put together a handbook which deals with pedestrian safety issues and talks about guides, talks about, I'm getting it to the point where it talks about floating bus stops, talks about sidewalk and intersection design and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's fascinating. I've been doing this for 15 or 20 years and there were things in there from New Zealand and Seattle and Washington State and all that Denver that I had never seen before. So I think it's an excellent document. And as soon as we get it reviewed and sent out, I think it would be a great thing for us to take a look at as a committee. It's a great reference.
Oh,
and it has a section on floating bus stops that I have not had a chance to look at yet, and comments are due and into it by Wednesday. So I have a little bit of reading to do, but I will share it with this committee.
Oh, good. So it'll be in digital form that we could send out to everybody.
Yeah, it's right now it's in a PDF. It's a very accessible PDF. It's got a few spelling mistakes and a couple other things that need to be fixed, but it's really in great shape. I'm very impressed with it.
Great, great. Thanks for telling us and eventually getting it out to our membership.
Will do,
as part of our homework to plead with the Bicyclist Association to get their members to understand what dangers they propose to us. So the next item is, again, committee discussion.
I believe Carol wants to make some comments.
Oh, sure.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to add, I know that Tool Design has worked with WMATA, Patrick. Was that a document that was prepared for WMATA or?
No, this is actually a document that is being prepared by, I think it's Jim Elliott and who is it? Matt Johnson is part of that group.
Okay.
And it's being prepared for Montgomery County.
Oh.
And it's about, you know, we're looking at it right now with, you know, giving recommendations.
Well, I would be glad to see that as well. Thank you.
Okay. Would you like to see the rough draft? I'll send you the rough draft.
Fantastic.
It's excellent. It's really excellent work. And it talks a lot of things that you've been saying over the years. So certainly I'll send it to you.
All okay. Right, thank you.
Great.
Yeah, this is Phil. This is, I'd also like to add, we focused on pedestrians, but we have to be aware that there are scooter and wheelchair people getting to the floating bus stop. Oh, there has to be a ramp going down and coming up onto it.
I think that in all cases they have done that, Phil. They have provided wheelchair access. I think that deficiencies have been specifically alerting people, first of all, cyclists that to slow down because somebody's going to the bus stop, and the other one is for people who are blind. I think that Tino's idea about educating cyclists is a good way to go as well, because I live near Rock Creek Park and I walk on a shared bike path with pedestrians all the time. And you don't know how often I've almost been clipped when somebody's passing by me because they pass so close to you. So there's a etiquette issue that we need to reinforce. There has to be an education to people who use bikes. I use bikes, I love bikes and everything, but there's some cyclists that think they own the road. They don't understand that people could, while they're walking, kind of deviate in one direction or the other, and then they could clip, they could really hit you. But and awareness of that is very, very necessary. And if the advisory committee can rattle some cages and get that done, that would be great.
Oh, we'll do some rattling.
Yes.
All right. Excellent.
Okay. I think it was a great idea. So let's move on with both the possibility of blinking lights, signage, and education. If there are no other comments regarding floating bus stops and bicycles and scooters, et cetera, we have a committee discussion again, a free committee discussion. Are we ready, Anu?
Yes, Chair Calabia, I see Ms. Rush has her hand up. Oh. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
Denise?
This is Denise Rush. I went to the bus stop, talking bus stop at National Harbor. And the first trip, it wasn't working. And I called and they immediately went down, checked it and fixed it. And I was very impressed. You can hear it. And it also speaks in Spanish. And it says this is the, you know, NH2 bus and the time that it's going to come, and it announces what is happening at that bus stop. After you've pressed the button, you can hear everything. I went back to my car, and you could still hear what it was saying while I was in the car. And you need that, because if they have the buses and the traffic and people parking, it wouldn't have been easy to hear it, but you can hear it and it's loud. So I was very impressed and very pleased.
Great. That's terrific. We should make sure that's noted specifically in the minutes. Any other question before we move to open committee time? If not, I did send out today the Pew Charitable Trust account of the cities around the country, or the transit authorities around the country, which are thinking either of or both and reducing fares for many or some riders, or eliminating fares entirely. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but take a look at it later. In the meanwhile, I should say that I've been for eliminating fares if at all possible. To me, it's a question of social equity. And in that sense, I hope that they would eliminate fares for people of color and low-income people, many of whom are our essential workers that we learned about during the period of COVID. Sometimes there'll be people who object to giving things away free. They'll call it socialism, that sort of thing. But I wonder if many of you or any of you would agree that it's time that we seriously think about free fares, or at least reduced fares for certain riders in our own jurisdiction. Phil, you probably thought about these things.